Radio Peking.
This is Radio Peking.
And no, you're not listening to Radio Peking, or what is known as now China Radio International. In fact, you're listening to PCJ Radio International, and of course the name of the program is Media Network Plus. Hello, I'm Keith Perron. Today, June 4th, when many of you are listening to this program, there was a major event that happened 27 years ago in the Chinese capital, Beijing, and that was the crackdown of the freedom and democracy movement that happened in Tiananmen Square. Now, of course, the media at the time was very different than it is today. Getting information from one end of the world to the other is actually quite easy, but in those days, it was rather difficult. Now, before we actually go back a little bit, let's listen to first how the BBC reported the story.
The noise of gunfire rose from all over the center of Peking. It was unremitting. On the streets leading down to the main road to Tiananmen Square, furious people stared in disbelief at the glow in the sky, listening to the sound of shots. Heading down the road was a hazardous business, but hundreds of people cheered as buses were set alight and army trucks caught fire too. They yelled and shouted, and then as troop lorries were seen moving down the road, there was gunfire from those lorries.
Troops have been firing indiscriminately, but still, there are thousands of people on the streets who will not move back.
The bicycle rickshaws scooped up the injured. Others were shunted onto bikes and pedaled to hospital. Many were carried away by frantic local residents. There was confusion and despair among those who could hardly credit that their own army was firing wildly at them. Many were bystanders, perhaps naive about the savagery of the situation. Indeed, it was hard at times to grasp that this army was launching into an unarmed civilian population as if charging into battle. From Tiananmen Square, the sound of gunfire sounded like a battle, but it was one-sided. A line of soldiers was strung out facing a huge crowd. The air was filled with shouts of "Fascists, stop killing!" We were in the line facing the troops. They were about 250 yards away. Young people were singing the Internationale to a background of gunfire.
After hours of shooting and facing a line of troops, the crowd is still here. They're shouting, "Stop the killing and down with the government."
A huge volley of shots just as I left the front line caused panic. The young man in front of me fell dead. I fell over him. Two others were killed yards away. Two more people lay wounded on the ground near me. Ambulances screamed up to the troop line and were turned away. They couldn't get to the square. Two ambulance drivers were shot and injured. Earlier, we'd been driving at the back of the Forbidden City, the old part of Peking, near the square. We picked up a woman with a bullet in the head and took her to the nearby children's hospital, into a scene of near mayhem. Casualties were arriving every few seconds, on bikes, rickshaws, park benches, carried in, all with gunshot wounds. Housewives, elderly residents, people shot while sitting in their homes. The operating theatre was overflowing, many of the staff in tears. In 20 minutes, 40 seriously injured were brought for emergency surgery. Two were already dead. In the streets, many came up to us, shaking with anger and disbelief and fear. Many were terrified, saying there would be retribution. There was not one voice on the streets which did not express despair and rage. "Tell the world," they said to us.
The BBC reporting on the June 4th crackdown in Tiananmen Square that happened 27 years ago today. Now, at the time, there wasn't much coming on from the state media, either internally or internationally. Now, back then, the station was known as Radio Beijing. Its previous name, of course, was Radio Peking. Today, people know the station as China Radio International. However, there was a brave announcer in the English section of China Radio International, or Radio Beijing, as it was once called, that went on the air with this.
This is Radio Beijing. Please remember June the 3rd, 1989. The most tragic event happened in the Chinese capital, Beijing. Thousands of people, most of them innocent civilians, were killed by fully armed soldiers when they forced their way into the city. Among the killed are our colleagues at Radio Beijing. The soldiers were riding on armored vehicles and used machine guns against thousands of local residents and students who tried to block their way. When the army convoys made a breakthrough, soldiers continued to spray their bullets indiscriminately at crowds in the street. Eyewitnesses say some armored vehicles even crushed foot soldiers who hesitated in front of the resisting civilians. Radio Beijing English Department deeply mourns those died in a tragic incident and appeals to all its listeners to join our protest for the gross violation of human rights and the most barbarous oppression of the people. Because of the abnormal situation here in Beijing, there is no other news we could bring you. We sincerely ask for your understanding and thank you for joining us at this most tragic moment.
Radio Beijing from June 3rd, 1989, with a live broadcast explaining to what was happening in Tiananmen Square. That was the only news bulletin of the events that were unfolding that they were able to pull out. Because just after that, the station ended up just playing music and towing the official party line. During my time at China Radio International, I did venture into the archives one day and found a whole series of tapes and broadcasts missing from that period of time. Now, at the beginning, I mentioned, of course, technology and the way news is covered is very different from what it is now. Back in those days, the idea of sending anything through the internet was rather difficult, if not even impossible. So the only way, of course, was by satellite. CNN was actually in Beijing at the time. They were there to cover a visit of the Soviet premier, Mikhail Gorbachev, who was meeting the then Chinese premier, Deng Xiaoping. Now, for the live coverage of the Soviet premier to Beijing, CNN had to work out a special agreement with Central China Television for satellite feeds. So when the story broke, this is how they started covering it.
Throughout the day, army helicopters swooped low over the heart of Beijing. Some dropped leaflets warning that force would be used if the demonstrators didn't give up.
There are bodies and injured and dead all over the place. I can see flames from an armored personnel carrier overturned and set alight by the protesters.
There simply aren't enough ambulances to deal with the wounded here.
The world witnessed a daring act by one man, armed with only courage, standing in the middle of the street facing more than a dozen tanks bearing down on him. He refused to move. Finally, several other people ran into the street carrying a white flag and dragged the man to safety. The actual number of people killed in Beijing may never be known, but the images of the past few days will never be forgotten. Tom Mintier, CNN.
Now, because protests had been taking place in Tiananmen Square during the visit of the Soviet Premier Mikhail Gorbachev, many of the news crews were not even focused on that historic visit. They were more focused on what was actually unfolding in Tiananmen Square. There was a lot of chaos going on because there were some members of the government that actually did support the pro-democracy uprising and also the students that were organizing this. But things, of course, started to change for the foreign media that was covering the visit of Mikhail Gorbachev after the live images started going around the world. Now, what we're going to take a listen to next is Bernard Shaw, who was at CNN for a very, very long time. He was actually in Beijing with a CNN crew to cover the visit of Mikhail Gorbachev to Beijing. And here he is explaining what happened and why their signal was cut.
We were just told by the government of China that about 58 minutes from now, the government will pull the plug on all transmissions out of this nation. That is why we're rushing to get our report on the air to you.
We had lookouts posted a couple blocks away from the hotel because we wanted the earliest possible warning. If they saw troops moving towards our hotel, they would be coming for us. We knew that. Instead, they sent two civilians into our control room.
I'm being told that the government officials are coming into the CNN control room now.
That we require a letter. Is that our company's policy, correct?
Yes, Alex, we'd like it in writing as to why we are being asked to pull this leash down now. Why we are being asked to be...
Could you hear that, sir? So all we are requesting is the same thing we requested to get in here, is a letter. We asked for permission to be here, and if you're revoking that permission early, just send us a letter, and we will be perfectly willing to comply.
This gentleman is writing a letter to us. He's explaining...
Now I'm here announcing that CNN should stop the movable Earth station and it's transmitting frequencies right away.
Well, the government has ordered us to shut down our facility, Alec. We'll have to shut it down.
Okay, the government's order, our policy is the government is, has ordered us to shut down our facility. We are shutting down our facility.
That's the story to the moment. For all of the hardworking men and women of CNN, goodbye from Beijing.
Can you imagine federal marshals storming into a newsroom telling you to stop broadcasting? After I signed off, I started crying. I realized how far away from democracy I was.
That was the CNN's Bernard Shaw. Now, after the Chinese authorities stopped the satellite transmission for CNN, reporters actually stayed on the ground and were actually continuing to stay at the hotel that they were before they left the country. But CNN did manage to actually get out some images of what was happening in Tiananmen Square. Now, the hotel that they were staying at actually is, you can actually see Tiananmen Square from one side of the building. And what they were using was a new technology at the time. Today, we take it for granted that we can take a picture and email it to somebody in a matter of just a couple of seconds. But back then, it was a rather huge task. So what they would do is they would take some video, they would make a screen cap of the video, and then upload that to CNN in Atlanta. Now, uploading one picture can take up to 2 hours, but they did manage to do this. Now, you're probably wondering, what about the videotapes? Weren't those confiscated? Well, they did find ingenious ways to get the video smuggled out of China. First, of course, was removing the tape itself from the housing, putting it in sealed plastic bags and hiding them in the reserve tank on a toilet in case the authorities came into the room. The second, of course, was then to hand the videotapes themselves to people that were flying to Hong Kong, which is exactly what they did. For a little bit more on what it was like covering that, here's Bernard Shaw again.
Unbelievable. We all came here to cover a summit and we walked into a revolution. Good morning from Beijing. Good evening to you, your time in the United States. If I sound out of breath, it's because I've come down in an elevator and I have run to the CNN anchor position.
I went to Beijing to cover a very important summit. The Chinese and the Russians finally were going to do something about this rift between them.
Protesting students literally stole the stage out from under Gorbachev.
Thousands of protesters remain camped in Beijing's downtown Tiananmen Square, demanding democracy and vowing to stay put through the Gorbachev visit.
This situation just deteriorated in the square to the point that the Chinese leadership decided that they were going to crack heads and clear the square.
Then came word that troops were massing on the outskirts of Beijing. The mood grew sullen. Protesters began to mass around the perimeter of the square. The government then went on public address systems to say continued demonstrations were illegal.
At this time, the government...
You kept saying, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? And the Chinese were watching us, and the Chinese didn't like the coverage.
Here in Beijing, the People's Liberation Army, blocked by the people. The troops do not, cannot move to clear Tiananmen Square.
Chinese government saw the demonstrations, I think it scared them, because they realized that suddenly there was this open spigot of information on CNN, and it was flowing out to the West. They looked to the media as part of the problem.
We were just told by the government of China that about 58 minutes from now, the government will pull the plug on all transmissions out of this nation. That is why we're rushing to get our report on the air to you.
The Chinese government has effectively ended CNN's live broadcasting by satellite from Beijing.
We started getting tapes out in any way we could.
The nation is now facing a choice, to live or to die.
We would go to the airport and beg tourists, please, can you take this videotape out with you?
We are afraid of nothing, neither shedding blood, nor giving our lives, nor anything.
People who lived in China really knew the danger that they were facing in taking this tape and putting it in their suitcase and taking it out. But they did it because they thought it was important. We saw the crowds growing larger and larger and more boisterous and taking out into the streets, expanding their demonstrations beyond Tiananmen Square. And we watched the police and the military kind of encircling them and trying to control them.
Throughout the day, army helicopters swooped low over the heart of Beijing. Some dropped leaflets warning that force would be used if the demonstrators didn't give up.
We were so desperate to get pictures out, we brought in a box that you plug a phone line into, and you could feed video frames to Atlanta.
Chaotic situation in Beijing, China right now as the army starts to move into Tiananmen Square to try...
I could literally hear the bullets whizzing overhead as the soldiers moved into the square.
There are bodies and injured and dead all over the place. I can see flames from an armored personnel carrier overturned and set alight by the protesters.
At one point, the soldiers lined up the first row in the prone position, the second row in the kneeling position, the third row in the standing position, and they were all firing. Nothing can survive that kind of shooting. And it went on for hours and hours and hours.
There simply aren't enough ambulances to deal with the wounded here.
They were totally outmanned and outgunned.
The images from the spring of 1989 remain some of the most powerful to have ever been on a television screen.
The world witnessed a daring act by one man, armed with only courage, standing in the middle of the street facing more than a dozen tanks bearing down on him. He refused to move.
He climbed up on top of the tank. He was banging on the hatch. We're all holding our breath for the longest time.
Finally, several other people ran into the street carrying a white flag and dragged the man to safety.
It represented, I think, what the students were up against.
The actual number of people killed in Beijing may never be known, but the images of the past few days will never be forgotten. Tom Minter, CNN, Beijing.
Now, getting information out of China is still difficult, not as it was back in 1989, but journalists do face harassment from government officials. This is actually quite common. The Federation of Journalists and the Beijing Foreign Correspondents Club actually has a number of reported cases. Now, it wasn't, of course, just U.S. journalists that also had difficulty in covering China at the time. It was the same for all media outlets, including the ABC. Here's the ABC's Elaine Zhang.
Officials have opposed a normal contact between foreigners and locals and tried to restrict foreigners to special compounds. Some of Terzani's writing was highly critical of the totalitarian regime. One report was about his children's experience in a Chinese school, where they're said to have been systematically segregated and observed. When asked yesterday whether Terzani was on the list of unfriendly journalists, a foreign ministry spokesman said, "I guess you can make your own judgment."
I also had, when I arrived, the problem of having to totally refurbish the apartment after 10 years. Because China was a very costly place. I think the figure given to me at the time, or I learnt, was in the order of a quarter of a million or so a year it cost in Beijing. Now, unlike today, where everything is made in China, nothing made in China then worked. Nothing made in China could be used in a bureau. You could not even get envelopes that you could lick. You had to use a pot of paste. Even stamps had to be pasted on with glue. There was no such thing as carbon paper. Now, maybe you've forgotten what carbon paper was, but this was not when everyone used a computer. There was no such thing as a fax machine. Faxes came out in 86 or so. However, they were not in China then. We used a telex machine. That was the form of communication. So everything was pretty backward. I mean, you couldn't have a Chinese-made typewriter. You couldn't have a Chinese-made anything. Mm. So all the equipment, even the paint, the carpet, the refrigerators, the stove, everything had to come up from Hong Kong. And the reason the refurbishment had to be left to a new correspondent was it would cost the ABC an arm and a leg, a couple of arms and legs in duty, if it came in of its own accord, not with a newly appointed correspondent. It was necessary to go through a Chinese operator to get a line to Sydney. And the lines were so poor, I had to shout to be heard. Everyone had to shout. That's why everyone in China shouts, or one of the reasons. And I would sometimes shout for up to 5 hours through a series of operators, because I'd lose one. I'd finally get through to Sydney. The technician would say, the line's no good. I'd have to go back, wait in my queue, shout through the operator, get through. This would sometimes take 5 hours before I got a line that was almost acceptable for a piece on air. In fact, I shouted so much, I regularly lost my voice. And one year, I lost my voice 5 times, and the newly appointed Australia doctor based in China said, if I didn't watch it, I could lose my voice permanently. Well, clearly I didn't, but so I was very lucky. Now, that, of course, has changed, because there's no problem in communication with China in any form now, even television, instant through to Australia and elsewhere.
Starting around June 3rd and continuing for a number of weeks, if not months after, domestic broadcasters also discontinued live programming. CCTV, Central China Television, just ran pre-recorded newscasts as well as, well, pre-recorded programs. All live programs were discontinued. It was the same thing for China National Radio and China Radio International. In fact, China Radio International did not resume any live broadcast until the year 2000, with a program that was created by CRI announcer-producer Deng Jun called Real Time Beijing. But in the last few years, there's actually been, well, a big change of what's going on in China. Censorship, which always existed, was actually kind of relaxed beginning around, well, the late 90s and early 2000s. But with the change of power in China from Jiang Zemin, who was the president of China when I was there, when I arrived, that is, to Hu Jintao, to Xi Jinping, things have actually started to change, and not for the better. As they say in China, for every one step you take forward, you move 4 steps backward. And that's exactly what's happening. We're starting to see local broadcasts in China for radio and television starting to pre-record their news bulletins again. Now, you're probably wondering what's happening at this very moment in China on June 4th, the 27th anniversary of the crackdown in Tiananmen Square. Well, just prior to June 4th, the State Administration of Film, Radio and Television sent a memo to all national broadcasters, including the international broadcaster China Radio International, to not discuss anything that could be even related to June 4th. This includes a list of songs that are suggested not to play around this time. I remember at China Radio International, usually around, well, beginning the end of May until the end of June, we would also hear from the State Administration of Film, Radio and Television as well. Some of the song titles were, well, unusual, and you kind of had to wonder why they would even ban the song. But anyway, they did. Anyway, that's the end of today's feature. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Stay tuned, because coming up in a moment, Glenn Hauser with our propagation forecast.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Glory 105, it is speed 222 knots.
Speed 220, Glory 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
All right, now time for propagation. Here's Glenn Hauser.
Heath from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast. Normal to fair at low and mid-latitudes, fair to poor at high latitudes by June 4th. From Space Weather South Africa through June 4th, magnetic conditions from quiet to unsettled to minor storm. Shortwave fade-outs unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK through June 5th, solar activity expected to remain at low or very low levels. Geomagnetic activity raising the risk of G1 minor storms, planetary KNX of 5, to likely during June 4th and 5th. Peter Coleman in Prague says the geomagnetic field will be active to disturbed on June 4th and 5th, quiet to active June 6th, 11th to 13th, and 17th. Mostly quiet on June 7th, 8th, and 21st. Quiet to unsettled June 9th, 10th, 14th to 16th, 18th, and 22nd. Quiet on June 19th and 20th. From SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field activity likely to reach G1 minor geomagnetic storm levels on June 5th, with A and K indices of 20 and 5, and active conditions June 6th, 11th to 13th, 17th and 24th, with A's and K's of 15 and 4 or 12 and 4. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2 only from June 7th to 10th. Solar flux creeping up from 75 June 7th to a peak of only 85 by June 18th. Tad Cook of ARRL Propagation says we should continue to see this overall decline in solar activity for at least the next 4 years. Compared to past cycles, this one is considerably weaker. William Hepburn's VHF-UHF DX maps call for extreme tropospheric ducting between Chile and Peru on June 3rd, off the west coast of Mexico increasing through June 7th. All week around the eastern and central Mediterranean and along the coast of Angola. Extremely extreme all week around the Arabian Peninsula from the Red Sea to India and the Persian Gulf.
All right, thanks a lot, Glenn. And with that, we've come to the end of the program. 73 and 88 to the ladies.